people. It is the Starship Rokon Show with Anna DeBlantis off for another day of broadcast insolence.
I went with an iced coffee today. It's the first time in a long time I've had an iced coffee.
I had to turn the air conditioning out of my car. It was beautiful.
Oh, that's nice. That feels
good. I got the sunroof open.
That's me nice. Too. I love it.
Yeah.
See, and then it's all going to go away.
It's going to be like 40 this week.
It's already gone. I walked across the Walgreens and it's windy and freezing.
I know. I got in my car. I was dealing with my accountant all morning.
Oh, fun.
Tax season.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because I got to visit him at the Metropolitan Correctional Center. So
you might have the wrong guy.
Really? Been with me for years. Anyway, I'm working out all morning and I go outside. I didn't really get out until, you know, about an hour ago. And I'm like, my God, it's beautiful out here. And I looked at my little phone app and I saw that it was good at 72 degrees. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to need a coat or anything. So I get in my car, I run a couple errands, I show up here, I get out of the car, and it's like 35 degrees below zero when I get out of the car. I'm like, what? Shouldn't there have been some sort of a warning about this?
There should be. This is totally wrong. But it did drop all of a sudden, even though it's still not all that crazy out right now. It's still pretty warm.
Better than it has been, but it is not. It's, you know, April's a mess. Just a mess.
I always say spring is such a tease in Chicago. You know, today you feel like so, like you want to run around and just, you know, get out there and enjoy, and then it back to normal.
Yeah. Well,
a couple days from now.
All I'm going to say is that, this is just
one likes a tease.
No one likes a tease, right?
No.
No.
No one does.
Right. Classic lean yon.
Yeah.
Not delivering.
Yeah. No one likes a tease. And that's how I feel about this, is that, put up or shut up, April.
Spring.
Yeah. That's what I mean. I need you to do that.
Oh, we'll have to tell Tom Skilling about that and see what he has to say.
Yeah, see if he can talk to April, convince her. Yeah. I mean,
as he sits on a beach somewhere.
Oh, is he? Yeah, he's on a beach somewhere.
Yeah, he's on vacation.
See?
I don't know where.
Then he doesn't care. Today.
All right. A couple of things that we should mention coming up in the program. As I said, Adam Kinzinger is going to be here. He's the congressman. He took on Zuckerberg yesterday at the House of Representatives at the big hearing there with Zuckerberg, which I bet he's happy to be wheels up from Washington.
Oh, yeah. There was a story that he went to his favorite watering hole and enjoyed the rest of his day in private. But, you think about it. Facebook stock at one point was up nearly 6% during his testimony. By all accounts, I guess he did a pretty good job. His own personal net worth rose by something like $3 billion while he was sitting there. And it's many say that, look, he came out of it unscathed.
Yeah, because he dodged every single question. He didn't answer one single question.
My team will handle that.
My team will get to it. Well, I don't understand this fully, so I can't answer it.
I'll get my team on that.
We'll get on that.
I really have no idea.
I don't know, okay?
You're
right?
Low. And then he stomped away. He stomped his feet away. Left and went to his room.
Hold on. Do I look tall enough for this seat?
I'm going to take my booster chair and go home.
I don't like it. Your questions are impertinent and impudent.
Gosh, leave me alone.
All right. Don't touch me.
I've got code to do.
It was really funny to watch him react when people would talk to him from different sides of the room.
Yeah.
I don't know if because he was nervous or he's just naturally like this. Uh-huh. And it would be like, I'm hearing something from somewhere. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, his eyes would dart like nervously to another position. You're like, who's he looking at? What is that? He did not look comfortable.
I heard something.
Mr. Zuckerman, did you hear one of the?
Yeah, I know.
It was
unbelievable how stupid it was. All right, so we got that coming up.
Yeah.
And then what does this all really mean for you? That's also coming up this hour, too, in terms of how are you going to be able to know that you're not getting somehow cyber-duped, which is really the issue here.
It is. And I think it only gets harder and worse in terms of the amount of data out there about ourselves and then the technology that's able to track it.
Right. So that's all coming up this hour alone. And we will, and so many other things, including, does Donald Trump have a love child? That story we must get to.
The doormen know everything.
They do know everything.
They?
Yeah.
Oh,
they know too much.
Done several investigative reports, and a quick chat with the doorman can help you out, set you in the right direction.
But a good doorman would never tell.
I'm going to tell you this right now, though. Everybody, right now, everybody's looking around trying to figure out who the love child would be. He'll be easy to identify. I can tell you that right now. Is that if he's any kid in a suit that doesn't fit him properly, like in fourth grade, who's in a schoolyard in a suit. That's him.
It's a her, I think.
It's a her?
Mm-hmm. That's what the New Yorker magazine, Dylan Farrow, you know, who's done a lot of the advanced work on this.
You could still tell. They all have a distinct look.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it, firstly. Although I will say this, that this does make Tiffany happy because someone's lower than she is on the totem pole.
Right.
Now.
Tiffany will finally have a friend.
<She's> like, <"Woo!"
laughs> I get it, sister.
All right. Let's check in now with Cam. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the WGN newsroom?
You mentioned a few times that we're in an arms race with Russia.
Yes.
If you're giving Russian intelligence service agencies, potentially even on a valid request, access to global data that's not in Russia, is that kind of a disadvantage to us and an advantage to them?
Congressman, let me be more precise in my testimony.
Yeah, please.
I have no specific knowledge of any data that we've ever given to Russia. In general, we'll work with valid law enforcement requests in different countries, and we can get back to you on what that might mean.
Look at back to you.
Yeah, I'll tell my team.
Any time that we
can't really do anything about it. I got to get back to you.
And ask my team.
Congressman Adam Kinzinger was the congressman asking that question yesterday up on Capitol Hill. And they get back to you yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
But, no.
Did you know
that? They're fast over there at the Facebook.
Congressman, they're very fast. In fact, while you were questioning Mark Zuckerberg, they took down the spoofing account that you mentioned to him. His Facebook staff, literally seconds later, people are showing it was taken down. It's no longer available. The ones that
I've had this thing for a few years where somebody is using my pictures and, you know, they're actually getting closer to my name now, but using fake names and, you know, getting money from people, frankly. So I mentioned one. I happen to look it up while we're in the middle of the hearing, and I'm like, oh, there's one. And I mentioned it, and basically by the time I was done asking the question, it was down.
Gone.
So fast.
Hey, we got it all. You know what? I need some things, too. I need to be able to, I need to block some people. So could you get that done for me, too? Is everybody on Capitol Hill coming up to you and like, hey, all the younger congressmen are coming up and going, dude, I need your help on this. And the older congressman, it was really funny. The Senate, I looked at it like it was Mark Zuckerberg explaining the internet to the founding fathers because there were people just asking questions that were like, had nothing to do with anything. All right. So let's talk about the deeper issues here, though, because this is such a fascinating, this is really the story that will live way beyond. And the issue of our time that lives beyond even the things that, you know, we're so caught up in with, you know, Trump and all the rest of it right now. Because this is just the tip of the iceberg, what's happening here. This idea that, you know, you go on to any kind of website, whether it's Facebook or Google or anywhere, and you put in your own information for the sake of convenience and communication and connectivity. Amazon's another example of this.
Mm-hmm.
That information, and this is the part that's really freaky. You could, it seems to me, I can't prove this, but it seems to me that if you're talking about something around a smart speaker that is registered to you, the next thing you know, when you go into your ads, all of a sudden Amazon's going to try and sell you something.
Well, he was asked about that too, Mark Zuckerberg, and he said, I think similar to the way he answered you, he said, well, I'm not aware of that. I'll get with my
team
and they'll get back to you.
Let me get back to you on that.
Yeah. Yeah, this is something that since I've come to Congress, we've been trying to wrestle with, which is, you know, what's the mix between, you know, your right to privacy, but also the right to free market and the fact that Facebook is free, the internet's free. It's not really free because they use the advertisement as the way to pay for it. You know, there's a little thing. In fact, I'm looking at the internet right now, and there's a little blue triangle you see in every ad. That thing's called ad choices. You can click on that and you can filter how they add to you and everything. But, you know, I bought a shirt the other day, and now literally every one of these advertisements, and I'm looking at it right now, is that shirt company trying to sell me more of those shirts. And,
right.
You know, and that's just one of the many things with Facebook, including, you know, people had emails and phone numbers and everything else. And it's something that's going to be really tough to wrestle with.
You know, one of the things about the ads on Facebook or on Instagram or anywhere else they are that seems a little unfair to me. Is that when they get people who are, you know, there's a term now for people who have a lot of followers, right? So they're influencers or they're trendsetters or whatever it happens to be. But what I've found is that if in our business, if I got on the radio or on TV, anybody who get on a terrestrial based broadcast and start hyping up something that they are personally being paid for, but they don't disclose that they're being paid for it. That is a federal offense. It's called payola plugola. It's actually something that has been in for 75 years. There have been rules about that. And this is a this and now, like, the tastemakers that are on Instagram, for example, mm-hmm. they'll wear a certain thing and they get paid for it. The Kardashians, right, get paid millions of dollars just to promote things that you know they're getting paid to promote, and they don't acknowledge that they're that is paid promotion. And so as long as we acknowledge it's paid promotion, we can do it on radio and television, but they can do it with impunity on the internet. There should be an equal playing field for that.
Yeah, and this is, you know, I didn't know that, you know, for instance, in the radio business that you have to acknowledge it, but I, you know, that's one of the things is technology accelerates way faster than government moves. And, you know, we always kind of find that this stuff's happening, and now we've got to figure out how to deal with it. And the problem is, you know, interestingly, when we've tried to do things like regarding privacy in the past, it's been Silicon Valley that's fought against us. And, you know, and I get it. There's innovation and everything else, but it's really an issue to try to get a grip with. And you know, when it comes to Facebook, one of the other concerns I have, beyond even just how you get advertised to and the information people are taking from you, is the general tone of Facebook. I always mention, I would encourage anybody, go onto my Facebook, my official one, Rep. Adam Kinzinger. I'm not promoting it, but look at the comments that are under the posts. I mean, you could put a post like, hey, you know, today is National Puppy Day. And if you read the 100 comments under it, it's like,
it's horrendous.
I want to, you know, you're awful, I hate you, everything else. And I'm like, what does this do to our political discourse?
Yeah, it's true.
That's the secondary. That's the other thing I want to mention here, too, which is it's kind of ruining us anyway. And it's not just ruining us. If you, there was a great story in The Economist over the weekend, because, you know, that's what I do on the weekend. I just read The Economist. About
the reading glasses and scotch.
Right, exactly. And that's
your smoking jacket and,
but
your fuzzy slippers.
There, what, this is an important, that this, you know, the kinds of the upheaval that's happening in the United States, given, you know, our political system and sort of the death of truth and reality and people being able to say whatever it is and then getting it and then tribalizing based on an idea that may be false, that's happening everywhere in the world simultaneously. That's not just happening here. And you have traveled the world. You go around, I know, because of your work as a congressman. You know, you're often in the Middle East. You've spent a lot of time in Turkey. You spent a lot of time in that region. And you see that those are the kinds of places where it's really, really, really affecting what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, for instance, okay, you know, in a post-ISIS Iraq, as we look at Iraq and we say, okay, we have Sunni interest, Shia interest, we have, you know, Kurd interest. And how do we get these people to get together to, you know, form one country that can work together? And it's tough to do, and, you know, we're 50% sure we can make it work or whatever, but that's what happens when you tribalize, when you begin to say that people that think like me, in that case worship like me, are the ones I identify with and nobody else. And that's what I worry about what happens on Facebook is if, you know, if you are, I mean, look at the conspiracy theories. There are people that actually believe that that the United States Special Forces did the chemical weapons attack in Syria.
Right, false flag attack,
crazy conspiracy theories that just get pushed around on that.
Right, I'm surprised the president hasn't tweeted on that.
Congressman, do you think, I know we're running short on time here, but do you think that Zuckerberg goes back to Silicon Valley now and everything is okay, or will there be some more regulations?
I think it's in Facebook's interest to kind of self-regulate at this point. I have a hard time seeing what Congress can do, but I definitely think Facebook's going to self-regulate, and we're going to continue this conversation.
Yeah, I think there's going to have to be regulation. You might want to look into that whole plug-ola thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, that exists in our business, and I don't know why that doesn't exist in theirs. And it seems like it makes a ton of sense. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right, let us take it away from us, that would be the wild, wild west if you did that. That's one of the things I absolutely do stand up for. All right, let us now check in with Kim Gordon with the WGN News. Concho with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. Lester Holt going to join us coming up in about half an hour. He gets ready for the NBC Nightly News.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just talking to Congressman Adam Kinzinger, who was one of the more entertaining questioners of Mark Zuckerberg yesterday at the House version of their questioning of Zuckerberg. The Senate did it on Tuesday, and then the House got a shot at him on Wednesday. And really, there's a lot of questions about Facebook and social media and what's happening here in terms of how our society and more specifically our politics are being impacted hourly by this, and how this is changing how people communicate and how people socialize and with whom they socialize, and how it's probably not good. And again, I go back to, and I hate to be snooty about this, but The Economist had this story over the weekend that it's not just social media. There's a lot of other factors here. Mm-hmm. But this kind of social and political disintegration is happening all over the world.
Yeah. And they said data is the new commodity. More valuable than oil.
Jamie Bartlett is joining us. He is the author of The People Versus Tech, How the Internet is Killing Democracy and How We Can Save It. And no better time ever for a book by that title, my friend. Thank you very much for being with us.
How about it?
Yeah, pleasure. Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. So let's talk about how this is a pandemic. This is not just an American problem, right? I mean, this is happening all over the world.
Well, yeah, it's every single democracy on the planet. I mean, and it's every single democracy is suffering essentially with the same problem, which is that we built a system of running our countries a couple of hundred years ago with a set of rules and regulations and institutions, and suddenly it feels like they're kind of being washed away by this brand new technology that I think is slowly eroding a lot of the key parts of what make democracy actually work.
Now, you guys saw it a year before we did, in the summer of 2016 with Brexit. You know, this was obviously the UK was first jolted by this, because that wasn't, it was anticipated to be a close vote, but I think there was a lot of this thought that, well, common sense will prevail here, and we're going to stay with the European Union. And then that didn't happen. And then, you know, coming up in November of that year, we had the same situation here where people thought, well, it doesn't seem like Donald Trump's going to win, but people are, you know, protest vote against Hillary Clinton, then all of a sudden he wins. And it seems that social media had a lot to play in terms of really propelling people to come out to the polls and moving them toward things that were counterintuitive more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, I think it played several roles there, because on the one hand, it's also the way that political pollsters are really struggling to measure public opinion in a meaningful way, because people aren't really parts of political parties in the same way they once were. They don't have the same loyalties to specific parties anymore, and that's part of the story. But, you know, I think it's even bigger than just Brexit or Donald Trump. It's about, to me, all across Europe and much of the Western world, we're seeing new types of politicians emerge. Those that, in a way, you might say are perfect for the social media age. The ones that trade on emotions, the ones that have the sticky messages, the ones that are able to kind of promise simple solutions to complicated problems. This is all what advertisers do. And social media is a perfect platform for those kinds of politicians. So I think this goes far beyond just one vote or another. This is about how our politics is being quite fundamentally transformed. And, of course, how important social media is for those political parties to reach new voters. And I think that's something that Donald Trump did exceptionally well.
You know, you think about the power to influence and even spread fake news or spread fake ideas and get people on board to messages that can really be harmful. But you have to look at the other side of weighing also how social media has given a voice and a power to people who didn't have one and didn't have the ability to organize, such as the Arab Spring in 2011. And you go down and you think about that power as well. And it's hard to weigh the two of them. It's such a massive, powerful machine, for lack of a better way to say it.
It is. Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And I say that in the book, you know, like there's no denying that this gives a new platform to new voices, gives it the same with the anti-gun demonstrations that you've been seeing over there in Florida. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's a way that people can get involved in politics. But I think that's the dilemma. I think that very obvious freedom that it offers us sometimes blinds us to some of the other problems that it's creating, deeper problems, things like the erosion of an independent and well-resourced local press, things like the ability of law and order to be actually able to police the digital streets, which I'm afraid to say they cannot do anymore. So while there are the obvious benefits, I think sometimes we've seen those benefits as being the only part of the story. But what I'm saying is there's something a lot deeper going on too that, that erodes the other bits of democracy that we often forget about.
Yeah. You know, the digital streets, you talk about that. It's interesting in Chicago that has been an initiative here because they're finding that there is in a increasingly large percentage of murders in this city that they are predicted or threatened on the internet first. And in gang-related activity.
That's interesting, And we're having a very similar thing here, too.
Right, because if you have people who are, I mean, you know, most murderers, people who know somebody, you know, they know each other. And so, you know, a great majority of that. And here in Chicago, it's a very high number as well. So it's, this is a, this is, a, and they're trying to get a hold of it. I mean, they have, you know, the one of the tools that Chicago police are trying to use now is this, they have an algorithm that is looking for potential new victims based on other people's relationships on social media. It's really, it's a fascinating thing, but again, it's not happening at a fast enough pace. And then, you know, and I want to go back to this thing, you know, it's like sort of, you know, one man's tragedy is another man's triumph here in terms of how this, obviously Donald Trump would look very differently at this. And like social media was great. It was able to coalesce people who otherwise have not had a voice. I mean, I think that's one of the things that, that he would say, and there are a lot of people who, you know, have had traditionally lived in still do live in isolated geographic places, and they couldn't really, you know, they get together at the diner, or they get together, you know, at the local whatever it happens to be, where the gathering places are, the Walmart, whatever it is, and they can see each other there, but then they go home and they're not really connected to each other because they live miles away from each other. Well, now social media allows those, that mindset, if you will, that psychographic, to coalesce on the internet, and it gives them newfound power and authority. And that's a great benefit to them. But the point is that those who wish to then move those people who are new to this kind of to the sociology of groupthink, because these are people who, you know, either by birth or by choice have decided not to live in areas where they are in contact with other people, is a very different lifestyle and mindset than people who live in a city. And so they often have very different views of people. They have they tend to be less tolerant of people who are not like them. That it's just this is not a slam. This is a provable metric. They tend to be less tolerant of lifestyles or and individuals who are not. They're not recognizable to them, and so you see this, and now you're coalescing groups, and so now there has to be, I think, a bigger conversation here about where we actually, what America really looks like, what are America's core values when it comes to this, and maybe we don't have the same core values that we used to, at least say we did.
No, I think you're absolutely right about that, but of course, you know, to me, one of the issues here is that you can bring people together. You can bring like-minded people together. And that is very beneficial for people that are isolated. But the flip side, and the thing that worries me long-term here, is that it also creates, and I think you mentioned it, it also creates a kind of polarization, a sort of tribalism in politics that is quite well documented, that we are increasingly, because we are now able to connect up with other members of our tribe, we're actually less likely to see our political opponents as acting in good faith. We don't trust them. If we disagree with them, we don't say, you disagree with me, I disagree with you, that's okay, we'll work it out. We say, you're stupid, you're evil, you're wrong.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
And far worse
than that. This in the long term, and far worse besides. And so this in the long term is a real problem for just the democratic culture more generally. So that's the thing, I think, that goes beyond Trump. That's about how we're dividing ourselves up into smaller and smaller groups.
I mean, let's face it, if Trump weren't elected, someone would have invented him, right? I mean, that's, you know, Jean-Paul Sartre is actually spinning in his grave right
he's
now.
But perfect. He's the perfect social media politician.
Yeah.
He is the ideal person to get traction online. His messages are the ones that, of course, they're going to go viral. They're emotional, they're sticky, they're funny, they're stupid. You know, this is the same way that John F. Kennedy was the perfect politician for the new medium of the time, television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where do you think it's all going, though, Jamie? Do you think we're going to push back on this at some point soon?
Or how do we save it? That's in your title.
Right. We're supposed to be able to save this, not kill democracy.
I should. No, and I don't want to.
Good.
And I desperately want to save representative democracy, because I think that your founding fathers were really onto something with that old idea. I've got ideas in the book, and some of it is down to better regulation. Some of it's about, you know, trying to bring laws up to speed. Some of it's giving, coming up with ways that democracy itself can upgrade a little bit. You know, we need to hold our algorithms accountable. We need politicians to up their game. I mean, you mentioned the hearing in the Congress. I'm sorry, the Congress people were better than the senators, and some of them were awful. They clearly didn't really know what they were talking about. So we need to get an upgrade here. But also it's on us. You know, we the people are responsible too. We are building these machines, these data machines, with our clicks and our swipes, and we can change it. We can be more conscious about what we do online, because everything we do online is a political gesture.
Right. Well, let's just put it this way. It's always easier just to ignore it and go along. It's just, you know, to the point, Jamie Bartlett, by the way, who we're talking to, The People versus Tech is his book, and it's fascinating. It's the thing is that the troll is the other piece of this that needs further investigation, because the troll is a self-designed moderator in the Facebook environment. Sometimes they know what they're doing. Sometimes they've been paid to do what they're doing. We don't know that for sure. Sometimes they have a political agenda based on something else that we don't know or understand. And sometimes it's just your crazy uncle who just will not shut the blank up. And, you know, and we need to do something about him too.
We do.
All right. Thank you very much, Jamie. Good luck with the book. Appreciate it, sir.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Jamie. Bartlett, mm-hmm. He said, I got that out.
The People versus Tech.
Kim, what's coming up at the top of the hour? All right. We've got coming up in the 4 o'clock hour.
Uh-huh.
We're going to talk to Lester Holt. You know, he is the anchor of the NBC Nightly News. I'm just name dropping right there.
Big time.
Yep.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah, kind of a big deal, Zim.
Yes.
Kind of a big deal. It's a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
Yeah, huge deal.
Huge.
Okay. Please don't talk like that in front of Lester, okay? Just get that out now.
Get it out of the system.
Gee. that's embarrassing.
Oh, God. It is like a family, you know, going to... It's constantly a family in a car is what this show is.
It totally is.
Or like the guest at the doorbell, you know? Yeah. It's like, huh, positions.
Yeah, that's what it is. All right, standby. I just like to let this play out.
Oh, it sounds so good.
Right. Because it's John Williams. You just can't go wrong with Johnny Williams. He seems to have worked it out. He's figured out how to make things very, very emotional.
Right. He evokes a certain emotion.
Even that song's a big deal.
David, yeah. What? All right. Lester Holt is about to join us right now. We literally pull him out of his prep meeting.
I know. And he acts like it's no big deal. But I would think that would be, you know, it's an important meeting. And he gets out of it and he talks to
us. He doesn't need the prep. He's fine.
It's they come in and they grab you, Lester, and they go, hey, Ro Concho with Ann Avlantis on line two. Get in your office.
And he happily does it, which, yeah, I would.
And, I'm out of breath.
Right. It's like, what are you doing?
This is the distance between our studio and the newsroom is about the length of a city block.
Oh. Keeps you fit.
You guys just talk among yourselves, and I'll tell you when I'm ready. No,
yeah, okay. Just the right distance.
You don't want to hear that.
Maybe some. Yeah, that is an excellent point, Violetta. He does not want to hear that. Mm-hmm. All right. So many different things going on here. All right, let's talk about Syria, if we can begin with that, because there is mixed signals coming out of Washington. That's the best way of saying it. Obviously, the president tweeted, was it yesterday or the day before, or a month ago? I can't even remember now. The fact that, you know, look out, Russia, here come the missiles. And then there has been nothing since. And he keeps saying that they're going to be making a decision here within the next 24 hours. But it does seem to me that the network news operations seem to be preparing themselves for some form of conflict here. What is your thought on that?
Well, we have our understanding is that the president was being briefed on the options today. Now, whether he was going to select the actual target package, and we don't know. But we've certainly been, you know, at this network, have certainly been poised to cover it whenever it happens. You know, these sort of things tend to happen in the middle of the night there. So you would expect some time in the early mid-evening here if that happens. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, to your point, yeah, he had kind of suggested, here we come, and then there was a lot of backlash to that because this is a president who was reminded us time and time again he doesn't want to telegraph to our enemies, you know, what he's about to do, and he got his hand slapped on that. So today was a little bit of a walk back in terms of the idea of timing. But as we said, they appeared to have, he was meeting with his national security folks today, apparently going over options. And one of the other stories we've got tonight is Richard Engel on the whole notion. This is complicated because it's not just hitting Syria, especially after several days. You've got Russians, you've got Iranians on the ground there. The risk of unintended consequences is fairly high.
Right.
And you have the international community saying that they don't want Bashar al-Assad's regime to get away with gassing their own people and the use of chemical weapons. A lot are saying, is there proof out there? I saw Macron, the French president, say that he has proof and he'll provide that. And it seems to be that there is sort of an international consensus that something might need to be done there. Is that what you
mean? Certainly the British here, you seem to be making preparations. And it's, we had reported earlier today that chemical analysis of blood samples of victims have been conclusive that these were chemical weapons that were used in that attack.
You know, when you stop, I just want to pause on this moment, because when you stop and you think about the people, whether they are French military or intelligence officers or U.S. intelligence officers that are going in there at CIA or it, you know, whatever alphabet goes in there for us, think about how dangerous that is. And just think about the heroism of the people who are going in there to try. And all they're doing here is now just trying to assess what this really was, because they don't really have a dog in the fight in this town. They're getting in, trying to figure it out and getting out so that so the world can understand exactly what has happened here, because there's a lot of stuff on, you know, that's on the internet right now that is making an argument, and undoubtedly the Russians want the argument to be made that, well, maybe this was something totally different. You know, this had nothing to do. It's a false flag attack, because they don't want anything to happen, because they want Assad to stay in place. The real question becomes this: if you knock Assad out, which seems to be the end point of the narrative, who controls Syria?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not even clear that Assad was aware of this particular attack. Now, that doesn't let him off the hook by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, there's the question of what he knew. And I'm also, it's a year ago, we saw another chemical attack. Mm-hmm. Why? What makes it the weapon of choice in these particular circumstances? And it's a little unclear. But I think the U.S. knows if it's going to strike, it's got to do something more than it did last time, which was take out an airfield in which they had launched that attack. I mean, there are plenty of places they can launch that sort of thing. And then, of course, how mired do you want to get in this when, you know, just less than a week ago he was saying we want to get out of Syria, like soon.
Right. Okay, and Mike Pompeo was up on Capitol Hill today in front of the Senate. He was
taking a whooping there.
Yeah, Cory Booker went after him pretty hard about things that he said on talk shows. And if you're judged for everything you say on a talk show, Lester, we're all in a lot of trouble.
But these are questions, because he's going to represent, you know, as Secretary of State, represent the United States in the world in places. I mean, one of the things that Cory Booker was trying to get him on is his, past statements about homosexuality. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and some people might think, well, why is that relevant to Secretary of State? Because you'll be going to countries in which, you know, homosexuals are persecuted or killed. And so, you know, he's representing the United States. So these have become relevant questions. But it made for some, you know, certainly some interesting, uncomfortable moments to watch in the hearing today. He didn't have an easy time.
I didn't get the sense, though, that this nomination is in trouble.
I'm trying to remember who. I think Rand Paul had indicated that he would not vote for him. So it's a pretty narrow audience you're speaking to, but I think the sense, at least from our correspondence there is that unless he has a major faux pas in these hearings, that he will probably be confirmed. You know, that's a little bit of a guessing game, so I toss that out there.
All right, Lester Holt, we know you got to run. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
appreciate
Lester.
It, sir.
Literally run.
Yes, get back there now. Get back to the studio.
That's why you're so fit.
Thank you.
Constantly running.
Thanks, Lester. All right, Lester Holt, NBC Nightly News right there. Who runs a block to get to us and a block to get away from us.
I think we need that. We need to run a little bit more around here. We just come in and sit.
I feel like he floats. Like, I don't think he's running. He's not breaking a sweat. I think they're carrying him.
With his, he's got the big muffler on. He's got
what
my grandparents would call it. He's got a big scarf, you know, that big woolen silk scarf that
when
he wears.
Outside on assignment.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
This guy knows how
sharp
to.
Sharp dresser.
Suspenders?
Yes. He's got the suspenders sometimes. Although, I don't know, is the suspender still in?
Yeah,
I like them.
For Lester Holt, yeah.
Especially if you wear like colorful ones. I think they're really fun. You can pull those off.
Leave it to Lester. He's got it.
Wait, what?
I said you could pull them off, Ro.
What? She is disputing this now.
I think Lester could do it better.
I didn't even have to do any convincing. She just turned.
Right here. All right.
Side by side, who wore it better?
Oh, God, Kim,
Lester.
Not you, too.
Thanks, Kim.
All right. Kim Gordon's got the WGN News update coming at the bottom of the hour. What's coming up?
Hillary Clinton in Chicago today and making an endorsement for governor.
Hey, Bill Clinton was in. I wonder who she's going with. Bill Clinton was right in front of our studios earlier.
Yeah.
Sighted on Michigan Avenue.
Yeah.
Should have invited him in.
Now, what time is Hillary speaking at? So, what time to what time is she going to be tied up?
Oh, gosh.
You didn't see me.
I was not here.
He's got a routine, some things he does here in town, people he visits.
As a matter of fact, I do have a routine here in town.
Does he wear suspenders?
maybe on your hotel room floor.
Well, no shirt. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, God.
People are taking pictures with him and posting it downtown and along the river and strolling around on this beautiful day. They saw the Bill Clinton out there. He's just walking around talking to people, taking pictures.
All right, honey, you go out and make that speech. I'm going to just walk up and down Michigan Avenue. Don't worry about me.
See, I'm gonna
you come back whenever you want. Whenever you want. Take
just
your time.
Just text me first.
Just call me. I'll tell you where I am.
Where's this triangle you guys talk about?
Gibson's? Which way?
There's no question. There is no question.
That's his playground. That was designed for him.
Oh, God, right. All right, let's see here. Am I going over to the tavern? Am I going to Gibson's first?
On a day like today, too.
I think I'm going to sit outside of tavern for a little while, watch things happen, maybe get a big T-bone over at Gibson's. Although he doesn't eat the meat anymore.
Oh, that's right. He's not all veggie though, is he?
No.
And then the
no.
VIP's truck comes by with the girl's phone number.
Oh, geez.
It just circles the triangle over and over again.
Oh, you know what? I got to get over to VIP's now because I am a VIP. Very important president. All right. Go ahead there, Violetta.
Get to know Joe starting April 23rd. Joe Donlin joins Micah Mater on WGN-TV News at 5, 6, 9, and 10. That is starting April 23rd.
Guys, got to come in here first, and we've got to pass the smell test over here first.
Yeah.
That's what we do. We're
going to ask him a lot of questions.
Yes.
You know,
I don't think we should smell him.
We check a number of things. That's an expression, Violetta. We check a number of things, and we ask him some questions.
Uh-huh.
This is like his pre-interview, his post-pre-interview.
Probably harder than his original job interview.
Right. And then we do check some boxes, and then we send him off to,
Then we become a big cheerleader for him,
become the guy who, I think it was very smart at Channel 9 to give this some breathing room between Mark Sapelsa, who's one of the best who ever did this job.
No question.
To give Joe a chance to settle in here a little bit. And it's going to be, I hear great things about him.
Yeah,
so it's going to be fun.
I wonder what he does smell like, though.
Well, you can do the smell part.
Let's creep him out his first month in town.
God.
Those radio people
smell
are
is
really
very
weird.
Important.
God.
One of the senses.
It's like Zuckerberg.
What are you talking
These
about?
These senators smell like death. God. And mothballs.
Gross.
I'm going to talk to my team about that.
When's the last time you actually brush your teeth? I'll have my team brush your teeth.
Can this guy admit?
Hey,
can I have a bigger booster chair?
Did you ever say anything in your broadcast career that you wish, as it came out of your mouth, you could grab and pull back in?
Yes.
Right?
You're not asking me, right? Because
That happens every day.
Yeah. Crunchwrap Supreme.
Right. That was just.
Oh, geez.
It's a really good Taco Bell special.
Oh, God. Let's not bring that up again.
Here's one.
Was it a member of this team?
No, no,
oh,
no.
Thank God.
No, 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 no.
Phew.
This is good. Yeah, this is making national news today.
Okay.
Because the Oklahoma Thunder has a they've got an announcer who used to be here, as a matter of fact, had spent some time here, and he was doing the broadcast. And he's, you know, the kind of thing that maybe I had to kind of rethink in the year 2018 from saying.
But he just said it? It
just came out of his mouth.
Just came out of
Brian
his mouth.
Brian Davis, who, you know, spent some time in the booth here in Chicago for teams, a veteran and a respected veteran in the industry. And then this happened.
Russell looking for Ferguson in the corner for three. Westbrook is out. His cotton picking mind.
Oops.
Did he say cotton?
Cotton picking mind, yeah.
Oh. I thought it was something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, get it? Yeah.
I do now, yeah.
Kind of expression that sort of went away and
like 150 years ago.
Probably good. That it did 150 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it just is the...
Russell Westbrook, by the way, first player to average a triple-double in multiple seasons, so I guess that's why he got a little carried away.
Yeah.
Well, probably not a good excuse, though.
You gotta
That's not really something that rolls off the tongue, too, you know?
No, it is. Well, this is a generational thing.
I think so.
Because I think cotton-picking mind was one of those kinds of expressions that, you know, maybe... Up until about, I'm going to guess, in the lexicon, till about 1975.
Yeah.
You could probably watch some, you know, on those dead-ender TV networks that are these sub-carrier channels for all of your favorite ones that show Mannix reruns from 1974. You might see, that someone might have written that in the dialogue. But pretty much... That's pretty much over.
You need to scrub that from the lingo.
Yeah. I'd say that probably 40 years on from that moment.
Yeah. I mean, it was spur of the moment, and he was just getting excited. So sometimes, you know, you dig deep in those moments.
Well, you know what I think happens there, and I have been in this moment.
Sure.
Where you're going to say something that you would normally say if you weren't in front of a microphone.
Right.
He's out of his fudging mind.
Yeah. And you can't say that.
So instead of saying that thing... You say something else.
Yes.
You go to something you think's more neutral, and it turns out being much worse.
You're quickly scrolling through the memory bank of, like, what do you got? What do you got? What do you got? What do you got? What do you got?
Substitute.
Something exciting.
And then it lands on 1975.
Because he went way back.
And he spit that out. It's like the Price is Right thing, just spinning around and around and around, and you land on that one. Yeah.
But he almost couldn't even get it out because he, like, said, cotton. He's like, what?
I think he realized as he was saying it, he probably was like, oh, I can't get it. I can't stop my mouth. I want to stop my mouth. I can't do it.
Oh, so he's taking a lot of heat for that.
Yes, he is. Stories. On the social media, yeah.
Well, even the Sun Times has an article about it.
That's
this
all right.
Afternoon.
I don't think he meant disrespect or racial intimidation or anything like that. I think he was just...
No.
Is it? You know, he sounds like a young guy. He's not exactly 100% young. So that's
what does that even mean? That's the craziest way to call someone old.
Yeah, he's old.
Okay.
Well, he's old. He's old enough to know better, but to also fall into the trap.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of one
right on the
spot.
Brink.
Yeah.
But I think it was particularly shocking to millennials watching because you probably don't hear that, right?
I've never heard that before.
Maybe your grandma.
You've never ever heard that expression before?
No, I mean, I understand where it comes from, but I've never heard that expression. No.
Yeah, it's because English is your sixth language, so I understand that.
So that particular phrase, though, how would you use it? Is it to call someone a simpleton? Or?
No. It's like you're crazy.
Oh, okay.
It's like you're out of your cotton picking mind.
Oh,
you know, that's,
okay.
That's basically what Grandpa
like,
Simpson
stick to
would
the
say,
rule. Yeah, okay, yeah. I get it. Okay.
And the Thunder has issued an apology for the language used during the broadcast. Did not mean what it sounded like.
Really, very sorry about that because really, this is a reference to cotton, which of course was the cash crop of the South prior to the Civil War, and therefore it would have been an offensive thing because it was human chattel and labor that was actually picking the cash crop, and that was the reason. That was many of the primary reasons for the conflict in the first place.
So if you had somebody come out and do that, then people go, all right, whatever. Move on.
Right. midway through. Okay, fine.
Yeah, I get it. He's sorry.
All right,
I didn't mean it.
Okay, fine.
All right.
Okay, get it.
All right, does the president have a love child that's coming your way? I love this story because it is absolutely, it's totally believable, and it means nothing. That's the thing. This is the kind of thing. He could have 1,000 love children and no one would care. This is a story without a purpose. And we will share this story without a purpose with you. Coming up. Did I hear somebody say Bubba Burger?
Bill Clinton, former president, right here in town.
That's right. I am going to roll tonight. Hillary's got to do a dinner, and I'm going to just hit the triangle like there is no tomorrow.
You know he will. You're only partially kidding. If you want to see Bill Clinton, get a picture with him.
There should be.
That's where I would go.
In the back of the triangle, they should actually commission a statue of him.
Right in that little triangle park,
you know, and like just a statue of Bill Clinton with his arms around a bunch of women. Taking a picture, taking a selfie.
This is what we strive for.
Yeah. You do. Oh, man. The Bragger Triangle welcomes former President
like
Bill
Clinton.
Right,
it's a parade.
Right.
It's a parade for him.
Yeah, it's a two-block-long parade. Starts at Oak, and it ends at Elm, and then you're done. And then it's...
Then you drink after the parade. This should be a street sign or something.
You know, why doesn't he get one of those brown streets?
Really
honorable,
we have enough.
Bill Clinton way. Of course it is.
And it's totally the Bill Clinton way.
It is. That's what it is. How you doing? Hey, all right, so speaking of this... So this story I do not begin to endorse as factual, but I kind of hope that it is because it at least gives Tiffany Trump some hope, which is that Donald Trump, according to a former doorman at one of his buildings, claims that Donald Trump had a love child with another woman.
Former housekeeper. Employee. They described her in some stories and then also as a former housekeeper of the Trumps.
No, we don't know. We don't know when this was said to have taken place. We don't know much about it. As a matter of fact, this guy was paid $30,000 by the owners of National Enquirer to buy the story. National Enquirer then didn't run the story because National Enquirer said they could not prove that it was true, which is, by the way, the first time ever the National Enquirer has ever said that.
The only story they've ever held to that standard.
but they said
a story about Michael Jackson still being alive. I thought I saw that in the grocery store.
I don't know if it's in the Enquirer though. But the Enquirer gets away with that by saying somebody said. You know, they have a source that told them that, and that's good enough for them. Mm-hmm. And so they did have a source, but they spiked the story like they're doing a lot of these things for Donald Trump. It appears, but the problem here is that even was it Ronan Farrow is. We've been writing about
this. He was the first one to really break this story and has been out front reporting all the details.
But he says it's salacious and they're not 100% sure that it actually happened.
They said they tracked down the supposed woman who's named as being the one he had the affair with and the love child with, and she emphatically denies the whole thing and thinks it's fake and ridiculous.
Don't have love child with a baby, with baby daddy, Donald Trump.
Where is he? If you're Melania, let me just ask you a question.
Yeah.
Do you let hot employees into your home?
I think a lot of women do have rules about that. Hot babysitters, hot nannies, hot housekeepers. But as we saw, it doesn't necessarily have to be the hotness level.
Right.
That drags them into the whole affair thing.
Yes. We've seen that the hard way. That. Right. Ben Affleck, right?
But she was hot.
Schwarzenegger?
Yeah, that babysitter
was a total.
Oh, right. That's true.
But the Schwarzenegger one was like...
Yeah.
Really?
So, I mean, I would... But if I'm Melania, at least, you know, she can't control... Well, anything really, but she can. But the one thing she can get a sense that she controls is at least who's, you know, in the house cleaning.
Does she even care anymore? Like,
well,
at all?
Okay, so that brings us to story number two.
What's that?
Which is that CNN is now reporting that that Trump had asked James Comey, when he was the FBI director, to investigate the salacious tape allegation that, you know, he was grabbing women by the...
The Access Hollywood tape.
Yeah, the Access Hollywood tape. Mm-hmm. To reassure Melania that it wasn't true, that they don't have anything on him that says, you know, there's nobody out there who's claiming that. He basically wanted to use the FBI as his own private investigative service to... And say to him, look, you know, baby, the FBI says I didn't do it. You got to believe him.
You got to go out of the way to get the FBI to prove to your significant other that you didn't do that, then you're clearly guilty.
It tells you exactly why he wanted to be president of the United States, because he gets the cool plane, he gets the FBI, he gets all these things he thinks are his toys and tools. And he's got that wrong.
But see, I almost find that hard to believe. Like, I don't even think he, like, would he even go out of his way to prove to her that, like, doesn't it even just seem like this point? They probably don't even look at each other and talk to each other.
I think this is being Comey's book. I think this is one of the many things that Comey's going to have in his book, that Trump already has people out there who are dropping the hashtag Lion Comey, and they're trying to discredit him and Rod Rosenstein today. Mm-hmm. His surrogates are going to, you could watch TV tonight, and you know, whether it's going to be Hannity or surrogates on CNN or MSNBC or whatever it is, you're going to see them going after Rosenstein and Comey tonight.
Well, you saw Trump tweeted out last night, even you know, watch Hannity, and it's going to be a big show, and he did. He did just that. He undermined the credibility of both of those individuals.
Right. He said that the FBI was a criminal conspiracy. Is basically what Hannity's take was, and they like a mob family, and that's a direct response to what Comey is going to tell George Stephanopoulos on Sunday night in an interview that's already been taped, but little pieces are coming out for promotional purposes, undoubtedly.
Right.
And one of those pieces is that Comey is going to say that the president is a... Hold on, I've got the quote right here. Let me just make sure I get this right, because I don't want to get this wrong.
About the mafia?
He says that James Comey is, quote, unethical and... Or no, Donald Trump, according to James Comey, is, quote, unethical and untethered to truth, and demands loyalty like a mafia boss.
Oh.
He also says that Trump was fixated on proving Lew dossier allegations were false.
Right. That's the different allegations about the golden showers and that kind of thing.
Right. Well, he's got golden showers. Every shower at Trump Tower is gold. Yeah. That's what they meant, by the way, in the dossier. Baby, sweetheart, hello. Are you in there? Melania, are you in there?
Still busy.
Are you with Melania? We're on the 70th floor. You can't jump out. Hello.
Did you see the promo for the George Stephanopoulos sit down with Comey? It basically asks a bunch of questions that you want to know the answer to or how he would respond to, and gives you nothing.
Right.
Nothing. You got 10 questions from George Stephanopoulos, just firing them. And then these looks, these just little painful looks on Comey's face.
Right. Like Comey, and it almost
doesn't
looks like Comey's not going to answer those questions. That promo makes it look like Comey's like, I don't know. I'm not answering that.
I'm going there. Why would I answer that?
Listen to this, and just imagine every time you hear Stephanopoulos asking a question, that Comey's like, I don't know.
How strange is it for you to sit here and compare the president to a mob boss?
This Sunday night on ABC.
Are there things that you know but haven't said that could damage President Trump?
James Comey.
And to those who say you should have brought Hillary Clinton before a grand jury?
The exclusive interview everyone will be talking about.
Was President Trump obstructing justice? Should Donald Trump be impeached?
Stephanopoulos. Comey. This Sunday night at a special time, 10/9 Central on ABC.
The great Brian Altimer just said to me in my ear that there's no question that Trump will bomb Syria at 7:55 at night so that ABC cannot run this thing on Sunday night. It's going to air at 8 o'clock Chicago time.
George will have to switch gears and get on the anchor desk instead of the news magazine
desk.
There's
no way. That is perfect timing. It's a wagging of the dog.
Yeah. Well, Comey's got a book out, and apparently that has been leaked too. So I'd be very surprised. There's just going to be a ton of information coming out about not only that interview but Comey's book.
Well, this is all in advance of promoting the book, right?
Washington Post supposedly has a full advance copy of the book, and I don't know why they'd be revealing the details, but apparently. It's all coming out.
Well, they're revealing, I think you get an advance copy with the understanding of these are things that you can reveal before the release of the book. Those are the kind of agreements that, that organizations go into.
Right.
You know,
maybe they're, well, we'll have to see. We'll have to see what they do. But you're right. It just, I think I'll watch Sunday, won't you? With this Stephanopoulos sit down.
Be watching
just
for the
way
for the
promoting it.
Rocket attack on Syria. Yes, that's exactly what I'll be doing. Right. Oh, God. Oh, that's what it's, you know, that's exactly what's going to happen.
Apparently, Comey takes very personal shots at the president, as well as sort of more ethical kind of judgments about him. He says things about his, like, personal appearance, about his, the way his tie and, you know, the way he claims to have, be taller and bigger and stronger than he is, and those kinds of things. He takes aim at him personally.
Yeah, because Comey is taller. There's a, that's
Comey so, wins on that.
Yeah, it's the only thing that Comey can claim victory on at this point.
That's probably true.
Oh, God. Honey, you still in there? FBI says they didn't. Nobody tinkled on a bed. Honey. I happen to think that there is still something to this because he has to appear in public with her.
Yeah.
Right. So he's trying to. But I don't know, does he really have to play? I mean, she knows who she married, right? Isn't that, that's the debate that we constantly have here. She knows who this guy is. She knows how she ended up with him.
I think everyone knows who he was. You know, there were a few surprises, right?
Didn't
we know he...
Right, but it's always easier said than done. Even when you're like, I'm not going to be jealous. And then you're like, really? You know, I mean, I think she knows what she signed up for. It doesn't mean it makes it any easier for her to manage, especially when the whole world knows.
Right. And
what's
she's
got
to stand up there and act and
still be the classy one.
Right.
Out of the
And she has been.
She really has been. The only picture that has been totally embarrassing to everybody is that with the Easter Bunny. It's the only one.
Because
the Easter Bunny looks scared, poopless.
But his face is stuck like that.
But Easter bunnies always look awkward.
Yeah, but this is they got the worst looking Easter bunny ever for the White House.
Yeah.
Because the Easter bunny's got this look like it's like a car's coming at it, right?
Right.
Like it's running across the street and it looks up and there's a tire right in front of it. And it's like, oh no! Holy crap! I mistimed this! Right? And that's and so there's the first lady who's looking stoic. Mm-hmm. Then there's, you know, the president who looks often, you know, sort of miscast in the middle. and then there's the bunny rabbit like, oh, God, no!
Where am I?
He said I was going
to a mall.
Kim,
I'll take the Macy's.
Kim, you got what's coming up at the top of the hour? All right. Kim Gordon has got the WGN News coming your way, and we got a top 5-5. And the Undersecretary of the Army is going to be in the studio with us, too. Stay tuned for that. Hey, it's the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Coats are back on Michigan Avenue. If you look out here at the street side studio, short-lived our little flirting with 70 degrees.
The Undersecretary of the Army is going to join us after 5:40, and don't worry about him. He's not cold.
He won't
He's not going to be cold. He's going to be fine.
He will definitely look like wimps next to him.
Yep, second highest ranking civilian in the Army, and he is going to join us to talk about, well, he's in town for a couple of really cool things, but also to talk about just basically the state of the U.S. military right now.
Nice.
So talking about that. All right. Here we go. Checking in with the, what is it called here that we do?
What is it again?
What is it?
What is it?
Hold on a second. There's something not working.
Everything.
It's the top five on the Ro Khan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeBlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
That's what it's called.
You got there.
Checking in at
number 5.
All right. Up on Capitol Hill, Mike Pompeo was there. He wants to be Secretary of State, and Senator Bob Menendez pressed the CIA director by asking him about his various conversations with the president. Now, what's interesting is Menendez began by citing a report from 2017, which said that Trump asked Pompeo and Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats to personally interfere with former FBI Director James Comey's investigation into Michael Flynn. Is that what happened?
The article's suggestion that he asked me to do anything that was improper is false.
Did he ask you to do anything as it relates to that investigation?
Senator, I don't recall. I don't recall what he asked me that day precisely. But I have to tell you, I'm with the president an awful lot. He has never asked me to do anything that I considered remotely improper.
Ooh, but I don't recall what it was.
Right.
Seems like you would remember that.
Yeah, but wait.
So you talked about the important policy issues. I'm happy to talk about this administration's work on Russia. I'm happy to talk about our work on sanctions if that's what you'd...
Let me ask you this.
If that's what's your question.
Did President Trump ever discuss the FBI or special counsel Russia's investigation with you?
Senator, again, I'm not going to talk about private conversations I've had with the president.
Well, that part's sort of fair, isn't it? The private conversations part.
Right. And here's Cory Booker with Mike Pompeo.
Is being gay a perversion?
Senator, I when I was a politician, I had a very clear view on whether it was appropriate for two same-sex persons to marry. I stand by that.
So you do not believe it's appropriate for two gay people to marry?
Senator, I continue to hold that view. It's the same view. Same
do you believe dignity. That gay sex is a perversion? Yes or no?
Senator,
do you believe that gay sex is a perversion? Because that's what you said here,
Senator,
in one of your speeches. Yes or no? Do you believe gay sex is a perversion?
Senator, I'm going to give you the same answer I just gave you previously. My respect for every individual, regardless of their sexual orientation, is the same.
Hmm.
Except it's a perversion.
Maybe he just doesn't like sex in general.
I didn't like the gay sex. I'm going to say that right now.
That's, yeah.
That's the sense I get.
Making that clear.
Yeah. I don't know. No one ever asked Rex Tillerson about that.
Sexy Rexy?
I don't know. I don't care. Whatever they do, I don't know. You know, I once did walk into a bathroom in a restaurant. And there were two guys in the stall and it creeped me out. But I don't really know.
It probably is what he'd say.
Whatever they want to do, I guess they're just going to do. I don't know. Mike Pompeo, I think, is going to... they're asking him a lot of questions that he's the problem with a lot of the high-octane, flamboyant, populist conservatives that Donald Trump has put himself around. Mm-hmm. Many of them have either been talk show hosts or spent a lot of time on the talk show circuit. And what Cory Booker was quoting from in this was among speeches, but was also about interviews that this guy had done with some fire breather talk show host in Kansas. That is that says a lot of crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what talk shows do. I mean, it's when they get people to listen by saying crazy stuff. And now, in the modern era, people can just go on the internet and see their uncle saying crazy stuff, so they're less likely to listen to the talk show saying crazy stuff. But that's what it basically is what it was all about. So he had to sort of stand up to his own rhetoric when he was running for office and trying to, you know, wedge issue himself into getting, you know, the attention of people on the internet. Go, he's one of us. So that's where he was. But is it really ultimately, if he says he's not going to act on those things, the Secretary of State?
Mm-hmm.
To me, the more interesting thing is that the Senate confirmed today the number two at the EPA.
Yeah.
Is a former coal industry lobbyist. They're going to take the P out of the EPA. Because remember, that stands for protection.
That's what we thought. It used to.
Not anymore.
Seems like something out of 1984.
Yeah. So it's going to go.
Protect the environment.
But that's what it was.
With the coal guy.
But, you know, that's elections. That's what they're all about. And America elected Donald Trump to be president, and then, you know, he's basically going to roll back the regulations that get in the way of business. And if it happens to maybe make the environment a little dirtier along the way, and no one said our hair wasn't going to get mussed up in this, and that's just the way it's going to have to be. And that's a truly political thing there. I mean, there's nothing illegal about that. It's the illegal stuff I'm worried about.
Yeah.
All right.
This one seems weird.
Speaking, it's so funny that I mentioned this, because speaking of...
Number four.
The EPA chief is facing a mounting ethical controversy as his Secretary of Veteran Affairs recently fired, was fired following a scandal, right? You had that guy have to go after misusing, was accused of misusing taxpayer dollars, and now the EPA chief's got the same sort of problems. Now, the president, during a Rose Garden speech, talked about tax reform and declared that he's holding up his promise to drain the swamp, but...
From the day I took the oath of office, I've been fighting to drain the swamp. And sometimes it may not look like it, but believe me, we are draining the swamp. And there are a lot of unhappy people. You can see that every day. All you have to do is turn on the news. Every time you see me hit, you know that I'm draining the swamp. And people don't like it.
That, again, it's like a sentence that, had no beginning, no middle, and no end. It's none of that was true. He's not really draining the swamp. He's got a lot of the same swamp creatures, and when he does drain the swamp, he replaces them with other guys who are, you know, swampy. I don't know. That's really not. That's not really what's going on.
I wonder if this Pruitt is in trouble though over these scandals that they're bringing forth, and if we'll see the coal guy as the number one at the EPA. Wouldn't that be weird?
I'll tell you what we need right here. We need us a coal plant right in the middle of Yosemite National Park. Geez. You know how much coal there is underneath there?
I bet there is. Oh, gee.
Oh, boy. Well, we get what we pay for, I suppose. Coming up, your three, your two, and your one. But first, Kim Gordon tells you what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Rode, the city's making another major payout in a police shooting lawsuit. We'll have that story and more coming up at 5:30 from the WGN Radio Newsroom.
Violetta?
Make the most of life after 50 with Prime Expo, a free event for active adults on April 14th. Learn more at PrimeExpoChicago.com.
And it's a Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Where are we in this?
On the top five of five. Yeah. I'm so glad you asked. We're all the way up to
number three.
All right. So you know that Katie Holmes is in town shooting a pilot for Fox?
Yeah. I heard that.
Yeah.
I've not seen her, but they were heard.
In this building, as a matter of fact. The main set is in the basement of our building right here.
What?
Yeah.
There's like 30 things being shot around our building all times.
Every time I leave the parking, I'm like, wait a minute. They're shooting something here.
I know. I'm like, don't worry, guys. I have time for autographs for everyone.
I always want to raid the trailer with the food because I can smell it.
Oh, I know.
I'm like, I'll just blend in.
Sometimes on a nice day, they put it outside the trailer, and you're kind of like, can I just walk by and grab something? Probably.
Now, here's the problem, though. One of the scenes is taking place on the North Shore, and... near a school, where there's a shooting near a school. It's a sniper attack.
Wow. Okay.
Near a school. And the parents are not happy about this.
These kids are subject to this violence on a daily basis, just in the news. Why do we have to come in and see it simulated in front of us on a park in which our children play on every single day?
Right. Actually, I should say north side, near north side. It's right there by the, it's over by the Jewels and the Vision.
By the Jewels.
Yeah.
But they're upset that they're filming a movie about a school shooting because it's disturbing.
It's not a school shooting. They're shooting it. It's a school. It's a shooting near a school.
Okay.
But it's not a school shooting. It's a scene. It's a movie,
well,
people.
That's what I was
Why don't they just
say?
Tell the kids it's a movie?
Hey, yeah, it's not real.
It's actually a TV show. And I think they'll know it because there's cameras and lights and big trucks.
Katie Holmes.
And they're catering the shooting. Most shootings don't have a catering truck associated with them.
That's so true.
Alderman Burnett got in the middle of this, too.
I came to make sure that the kids were okay, and the principal assured me you didn't hear a gunshot. I mean, they're probably going to put the sound effects in later.
Oh my God. If there's another one?
I will ask them to do it when kids aren't in school.
Okay.
Oh, that was nice of Alderman Burnett. Check that out.
Come on.
No. It's caring
about
the neighborhood.
You just have to talk to the director. You don't have to check anything out. It wasn't a real shooting.
Right. I mean, he's doing what he's supposed to do. He got the call.
But if they were actually putting out gunfire, things that sound like gunfire outside of a school, I think that would be upsetting for the kids. Thank you, Alderman Burnett, who happens to also be my alderman.
Oh, I see what you're
Appreciate
doing there.
It.
Oh, I got what's happening there.
Enjoy this $20 on me. It's a gift card, so it's not cash.
Would never.
That would be illegal. You might be doing something like that, but Anna would never do anything like that.
No, I would not.
I'm doing it on her behalf.
But but the point here is that it's a TV show.
It's a TV show.
It stars Katie Holmes as an FBI agent. It's made up.
It's probably the parents are panicking. The kids are like, this is super cool.
Parents are just out to make a statement here. It's very important.
Just looking for something to do.
The park that they're talking about is not exactly the safest park in Chicago, nope. I might add.
I used to live right by it.
Yeah.
And I would take my dog at the time over there, and yes.
Yeah. So there are other issues with real Chicagoans, not Katie Holmes causing trouble over there.
Number two.
Marvel Comics legend Stan Lee has slammed reports that he's a victim of elder abuse. If there's one guy you do not want to do elder abuse on, it would be Stan Lee, because he could be a superhero. You never know.
Sure.
He'd be one of those guys. He's like close to 100 years old, this guy.
Is he really?
Yeah. And he says that he is surrounded by family, and he's got... and that there were a lot of stories actually that said that there were people out to get him because his wife had died and there was nobody around him who actually cared about him.
Hi, this is Stan Lee, and I'm calling on behalf of myself and my friend Kia Morgan. Now, you people have been publishing the most hateful, harmful material about me and about my friend Kia and some others. Material which is totally incorrect, totally based on slander, totally the type of thing that I'm going to sue your ass off when I get a chance.
Whoa. Watch out.
That was the name of my Russian accountant for many years. Sue your ass off. It was his last name. Anatoly was his first name. Mm. Hey, you know this stems from? He's in a fight with his daughter over the estate of the dead mother.
Oh, I see.
And so she's claiming that you know, and always, you know, dad gets a new girlfriend and this and that's the, so that's what's happening there.
He sounds like, take him seriously, though.
Yeah. All right, and finally.
Number one.
Residents say they are tired of having their feathers ruffled by an aggressive goose. This is in Debris, Florida. For weeks, neighbors say the goose has been nothing but trouble, chasing people and damaging property.
Oh, my husband was working on a lawn, and the duck was trying to attack him. He usually follows the kids home from the bus stop, or he tries to attack everybody that's at the bus stop.
Is it a duck or a goose?
She said duck, but I bet it's a goose, because those geese can be really aggressive.
It's a goose, yeah. Duck, duck, goose. Maybe if you called it a goose and not a duck, it wouldn't be so mad.
It's her fault.
Did you ever think about that? Lady, I mean, Kevin and I can attest to this.
Uh-huh.
Golfers know that you can get a goose that's just like out of its mind.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You get a goose that's protecting its territory.
Oh.
You know, some people are afraid of like snakes and spiders. I hate geese. Like, I'll steer clear of those things. I've seen what they're capable of on the golf course.
Yeah, you can't look
and they hiss at you.
I am more likely to go near an alligator on a golf course than I am a goose. That's true. Leah Jones, took cell phone video of the goose that she says ripped apart her neighbor's window screens.
See where he's already damaged the neighbor's screens. If he comes after me, I'm letting my dog out. He's also broken several windows, painted and stuffed in the yard some peas.
Oh boy.
More because of this.
The whole neighborhood terrorized by a goose.
Are they sure it's the same goose?
Oh, my God. This is a news or ruse bit. Goose terrorizes neighborhood.
I mean, these are real problems.
It kind of also sounded like the United guy getting pulled off.
Now, what's the reason that the goose is doing all of this?
That's a great question.
Well, he had a friend, and then the friend passed. I don't know what happened with the friend, but his friend died, and then that's when the goose went, like, a little bit crazy. Not that he should be harmed. I think they should get a friend for him.
Now, what is it? Was it a goose friend or a human friend or was it a duck? Who was his friend?
What kind of friend? Like a companion or like, you know, just a buddy?
And is this
do they mate for life, the geese?
Is this like
is it like a swan losing its mate?
I don't know, but is this like a Pixar movie and all of a sudden, oh, he lost his friend, so now he's tearing apart people's.
Give him a break. He lost his friend.
Yeah.
He's mourning.
Now you kind of feel for the goose, don't you, after beating up on the goose?
Here's your screen porch.
Do people eat geese?
Get it out of there.
Goose liver.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. The goose. Yeah, pate is.
Oh, I love pate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh?
All right.
Well, good luck to the goose.
You can't beat him.
Sniper.
Eat him.
Yeah.
The top of one of the roofs of the house. Take it up. We've got it.
Okay. We can move the sniper from the movie set here.
Right.
But he wouldn't be able to hit it because he's an actor. He's an actor on a TV show.
They're going to add the gunshots in later, the sound effects.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right.
It's well involved.
All right. Let's close this thing up, shall we?
The top five at five.
This is quite an honor to have in the studio with us right now, Ryan McCarthy. He's the Undersecretary of the Army. Yes, our Army, the United States Army.
The Army.
And it turns out that Ryan is actually originally from the Chicago area, from Glenview. Went to high school at Loyola Academy. And thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations on your success, sir.
Thanks for having me.
So the let's talk a little bit about this, because I know that some of your mission here in Chicago has been talking to ROTC programs, and obviously the military is always in the job of recruitment and maintaining the messaging to get young people involved in this. What drew you in? Because when you came out of you went to a military based college, VMI, right?
Yes.
And so what made you want to do what you do?
My father was in the service, as well as my uncles, grandparents, so multiple generations, about six generations of my family going all the way back to the Civil War, served in the military. So it was always there, sitting in the kitchen and at my grandparents' house off of Devon up on the north side and near Loyola University. So it was a pretty exciting time for us to watch the Ramblers this year.
Oh, yeah. Go Sister Jean, too.
Unbelievable. My grandmother worked in the bookstore there, too, for that matter.
Oh.
For years up in the Damon Student Center. It's where they used to have the bookstore. It's always been there with my family. And we find that 79% of soldiers on active duty today have family members that have served.
Yeah.
And part of my mission here in Chicago for the past 24 hours, and we head up to Rock Island tomorrow, is engaging the community. You know, the demographics in the country, the national average of youth that are interested in military service is 11%, but Chicago's at 5%.
Wow.
And we you know, I'm pointing the thumb here. We got to do a better job as in the Army to engage the community, make investments, and try to encourage young men and women for service.
There are academies here, ROTC academies, the Chicago Public School System.
Quite a few.
And which are... have been very successful. And the kids coming out of there are very impressive.
I was with Mayor Emanuel this morning. We went up to the Phoenix Military Academy. What's that over on Campbell? It took your breath away. I mean, I wish I had 192 contracts in my hand. There were some outstanding young men and women. And really, you know, Mayor Emanuel's leadership is setting the pace for the country. This is the largest footprint for JROTC in America. They are the program itself builds character and values that will be successful in any pursuit in life. But they're the kind of young men and women that we want. And the Department of Defense invested about $5.5 million into the JROTC programs here in Chicago and the STEM R&D. And
right.
We built a weight room up there in Phoenix.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because the military is changing dramatically. And it seems to me that the kinds of things that recruiters are looking for, you know, are different than they were two generations ago, certainly during the Vietnam conflict, and then and a generation ago when the first Gulf War was starting. You're looking for STEM, you mentioned, because technology is such an important piece of this. You know, they always joke about, for at least for the Air Force side of it, that, you know, eventually they're just going to want gamers to fly drones, right? But that's really not true. I mean, it's a lovely concept, but the truth is that you're still looking for people who not only have great technical capability, because it's complicated stuff, right? Whatever service you're going into, there's a lot of complicated equipment that people have to get familiar with. But you also need people who are, you know, they're going to be able to take the mental and physical rigor of it.
Yeah, so I was airborne infantry when I was a younger man, and I think that at the end of the day, character and toughness is what we need to look for in every soldier.
It's
at our foundation. We're a values-based organization. But to your point about the technical expertise, our weapon systems are getting more complex. If you look at the challenges we face in the world, near-peer competitors, China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea have made vast investments in their weapon systems, the military modernization, as well as economic competition. So we do have to push the envelope in getting STEM education into our the curriculum for all of our soldiers and their training.
You do hear from this administration a real pledge to modernize the military, enhance the military in terms of its capabilities, put more money there, but also boost the size of it. And so there must be a recruiting need right now. Is there a push to fill the spots? And what kinds of things do you like to tell people about that, what you offer?
So on both fronts there, and I think we are modernizing the force. We have a robust budget in the 18-19 budget deal. We're very grateful for that. A huge uplift. That was they stroked that deal, you know, just a couple weeks ago, March 22nd, I think it was. The Congress approved that. Excuse me. So we have vast investments. We've increased our R&D budget from $9.4 billion to over $10.7 just for this year alone. Mm-hmm. So the investments will be there against key technologies. A lot of our weapon systems are 40 years old. Our major platforms like the Bradley, the Abrams, Patriot missiles.
Right.
But so it's as much as the investment into the weapon systems as it is the people.
Well, the people are the big number, though. That's the biggest part of your budget.
We have, yeah, it's over half between the military personnel and then operations and maintenance. So 470,000 on active duty today, over 1 million between the active guard reserve and so we are a people organization at the end of
at the U.S. Army. That's Army. You're talking about close to a million people total.
Yes.
In terms of
just in uniform.
Just in uniform, yeah. Right. And so then maintenance and all the rest of the kinds of things that you guys have to account. And there's if you've been in any active duty base, there are a lot of civilians mm-hmm. working on those bases that are doing the things that that need to get done as well. And so so in terms of payroll, that's always a big issue. And I think one of the debates I know that is had at the think tank level and even at the Pentagon is do we need as many people now that technology is kind of entering into the warfighter mentality and the battlefield? Mm-hmm. Do we really need as many folks boots on the ground? What's your thought on that?
I'm on the organized training equip side of the business, not on the policy side. This is around setting foreign policy objectives. But we meet the demand. And we live in a very complex and dangerous world. We have over 180,000 troops deployed worldwide in about 140 countries. So, our presence is all over the place. And it's necessary to have the force generation necessary. You got folks forward. You got others training, others coming home and refitting. It's a complex equation that requires a great number of people. So due to the dangers and the complexities we face in the world, we have to continue to grow the force to meet demand.
It's totally a fascinating change here, too, because it used to be seen, I think a lot of people have the old school mentality of the big green machine, just drop a bunch of boots into a place. The World War II model, even Vietnam was kind of fought that way, and it's not like that anymore. You're dropping smaller groups of highly trained, highly effective, efficient troops into situations, into tactical situations, one at a time, or two, or five, or ten at a time, whatever it happens to be, in terms of numbers of groups of people. And that seems to be the mode. You still have to have the one issue, and I think this is one of the things as we head toward whatever the Middle East. If there's going to be peace in the Middle East, there we've already been in two occupations in essence, in Iraq and Afghanistan. We may be heading toward a third with allied occupation and try rebuilding efforts. You're going to need, that's where you need more like police activity, right? As opposed to, and perimeter security activity and things like that, as opposed to, that's where a lot of the demand for personnel is going to come from, I would imagine.
It's going to range from responses to hurricanes. We had over 10,000 people just in Puerto Rico last fall, and I traveled down there with a local reporter here from Chicago last fall just to look at recovery efforts. But, we respond to all national objectives.
So my point being that it's a broad range of things.
It's breathtaking, what's asked of the U.S. Army, and we always deliver. Mm-hmm. But that's difficult because it requires you know, the upwards of 150 different skill sets. Right. Hundreds of thousands of people. So it's difficult, and we have a lot of reform efforts underway to look at how can we change our business model. So one thing in particular, we're restructuring the Army right now. For the first time since 1973, we've gone through a comprehensive effort to restructure the business model. And in particular, we're creating an organization called Army Futures Command. So what we're looking there is how do we innovate the Army, be more effective, more efficient in the way we develop weapon systems in particular.
And that's a technology concept? And training, I'm assuming?
The industrial age model that we've been operating under for the last 44 years would just kind of move incrementally through the system across our major commands, which you can think it'd be a long time when you have over 1 million people on active duty. We have 3 major commands today. We're going to move to a fourth, this Army Futures Command led by a 4-star general. Mm. And so in so doing, we're moving our engineering talent and what I call our requirements community, our operators, bringing them all together under one roof. So this will reduce span time, be more efficient in utility of our investments, and help us collapse that span time, which is bureaucracy. And it's expensive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
is there a certain area or a certain skill set the Army is looking for, or would you say there are certain areas you really want to fill?
So, with respect to modernizing the force, which is why we're creating this futures organization, we'll have futures and concepts and what we call combat development, where we can do research and engineering. So, systems engineering is something that the Department of Defense, writ large, not just the Army, has not done well with since the 90s. Mm-hmm. And part of my visit here, I was at the University of Chicago as well as Northwestern.
Yep, go Cats.
Last fall, we restructured the Army Research Lab and opened up a central location. We cut the ribbon down on the south side of the University of Chicago, mm-hmm. the Polsky Center.
Yeah.
And we're developing an ecosystem with the colleges here in the Midwest and really trying to reinvigorate those relationships that has a pretty storied history, starting back down in the 40s down there on the south
sure
side.
Does.
So we had Purdue, we had Purdue and Northwestern and Wisconsin, so they're all there. And earlier today I had lunch with all these folks up at Northwestern, and we were talking about our investments, our partnership. So a lot of that is our communication of our engagement and matching incentives.
And you're dealing there with research and development primarily, right?
Yeah, that was, how do we get this engineering talent and bring it together from academia with the Army Research Network, when it's making best max utility of our investments, our investment portfolio.
And we're talking to Ryan McCarthy, who's Undersecretary of the Army, and gracing our studio today. And you did mention when you got out of VMI, you went right into the service, and you were one of the early boots on the ground. In what I think we now call the War on Terror, really more than this era, and Jim Mattis was your commanding officer.
He was actually the battle space owner. Mm-hmm. He was the Marine Expeditionary Force commander, and he owned the battle space. That's the first time that I met him. I was a captain in the Ranger Regiment. He was a Brigadier General at the time. So, mm-hmm. Time flies.
Yes. And look what's happened. And when you actually had worked for a previous Secretary of Defense, too, and Bob Gates, who's been on this program a couple of times, written some really interesting books over the years about what that was all about. I think 100 years from now, people are going to be looking at that, the story of America's engagement in the Middle East and seeing it refiguring it through the eyes of the people who are actually there and structuring this and fighting the war. And I think it's going to be different when the politics of this leave than when you see what the decisions were made at the time and why the decisions were made at the time. So Jim Mattis, though, right now, obviously, he's sort of the man of the hour here as people mm-hmm. are looking at him for whatever is going to occur, if anything is going to occur in the Middle East. And he's everybody. And I'm just looking to you to pat me on the head and say this is true. But everybody that we've talked to who has known him or worked for him has the ultimate respect for him.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to put into words. He gave me a call back in February of 2017. And he said he wanted to talk to me. He's the Secretary of Defense, and I was in private sector, and you kind of know where that was headed. And had a 40-minute conversation, and he talked about he was trying to build a team, the political appointments, trying to build a team in the Pentagon, and we had a deal before I broke the plane of the door leaving. It's you know, so much of life is, you know, the people you spend your time with, you invest your time with, and I trust him with my life. He asked me to be on his team, and it, you know, was over before I stood up. So,
all right,
how cool.
Well, there you go. Local boy makes good.
Yeah,
I think
that's
the end of this story. Ryan McCarthy, Undersecretary of the Army, grew up in Glenview. Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it, sir. It's an honor to have
you. Thank you for your
service. You. Thank you. We right now have got Kim telling us what's coming up at the top of the hour in the newsroom. Con Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. And Richard Roper is in the studio with us, and he's gonna review some things.
Yes, movies. I thought movies would be something.
Some things are under review at the moment. Sure. All right. I'm very excited about this, actually, because I love the John Hamm.
Yeah.
I love, as much or more as I love the Facebook, as we learned, that's what every senator in the United States has to call Facebook.
And every millennial cringes when they hear the Facebook.
The John Hamm is, you know, he's been in a lot of wacky comedies after Mad Men. He's got really good comedic timing, but he plays kind of a goofy version of himself in almost everything he does. And now he's in a real serious role.
Yeah, the movie's called Beirut. And if you see any of the ads for it or you read about it, you think it must be based on true events. It's set in two eras, the early 70s and then 10 years later in the early 80s. And Beirut in the early 70s was kind of this, I mean, there was a lot going on there, but it was a little bit of a cosmopolitan, cool place to be in the early 70s.
It was the Paris of the Middle East.
Exactly. Very good, Rokan. Ding, ding, ding. Give yourself a ding, ding, ding for that. There. Look at that. There you go. Both of them.
Thanks.
But then, so he plays a diplomat, but it's pure fiction, but it's told in the way that you feel like this must have happened. So he plays this kind of smooth talking diplomat in the early 70s. Cut to 10 years later, he's become an alcoholic, broken down, kind of small time union lawyer, labor lawyer, I should say, back in the States because of tragedies that happened to him back in the early 70s. But now he's been pulled back in because someone he used to be friendly with has now become a major, major, horrible, evil terrorist and has kidnapped a CIA agent who used to be friends with John Hamm. So it gets really complicated. So now he's back in the game and he's trying to negotiate for the release of his former colleague. So that's the scene we've got right here we're going to play is John Hamm as the American diplomat and then the terrorist who has kidnapped his friend.
I need to see Cal.
Impossible.
I need to see Cal and I need to speak to him.
Find Rafid, that comes first.
If I had your brother, I would let you talk to him.
It's impossible.
It's only impossible if he's dead.
Akhraj.
Hold on, what are you kidding me? I'm supposed to trust you now?
Akhraj.
Huh? You're the whole reason I'm here. I gave my life up to protect you.
Akhraj.
I want you to listen to me very closely if you ever want to see your brother again. I don't make a move until I talk to Cal.
So you can tell intense stuff, and John Hamm really good. And the reason he's talking to this terrorist about his brother is the kidnapper wants to exchange the American for his brother, who was responsible for the Munich Olympic murders and many other things, and they think is in custody. So they're like, hey, we'll trade you our guy if you give us your guy for our guy.
So is it based on a true story?
Okay. It's from the same guy who gave us Michael Clayton and the Bourne movies. It's really good. I'm giving it 3.5 stars. It is, as you could tell, it gets pretty complicated. And there are some times where you're like, okay, wait a minute, because now the Israelis get involved, and then there's a CIA, and then there's an FBI, and then there's one of those guys who's with, you know, kind of OGA, other government agency, where they never explain exactly who they're with, right? But it all distills well, and it's really well
filmed. That is a term of art, by the way.
Yeah.
That's a real term that they use. Right? Yeah, OGA.
And a lot of familiar actors you'll see, like Dean Norris, for example, who was in Breaking Bad as Hank, is in this as a government operative. So a lot of familiar character actors. Rosamund Pike, who was in Gone Girl, terrific. And she plays someone who's kind of John Hamm's character's minder, you know, has to keep an eye on him because he is playing a guy who, once again, is an alcoholic. Nobody sits at a bar like John Hamm in the movies or on TV,
best.
Right?
He is the best, yeah.
So it's kind of interesting because it's like, oh, he would have been in the same era. This is set a little bit later than Mad Men, but it's a very different character. And he's very good at playing this guy who's, been shattered, but, you know, is kind of trying to do the right thing one last time. So it's almost like a kind of a Casablanca feel to a little bit, too, where all these people are so deeply involved in so many different adventures and crossings and double crossings and stuff. So you got to stick with it, but it's really good. Good stuff.
Okay, so they're marketing this movie as John Hamm's great dramatic turn.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they're the commercial for it. Everything is designed to tell you, hey, rethink John Hamm as an actor here. And he's been great. I mean, in Baby Driver, he was spectacular. And he played, spoiler alert, a bad guy in sort of. I mean, you can't quite figure it out. But that's, I think, part of the great nuance of his acting skill, which is you're never quite sure.
Yeah.
Which is great.
You know, Don Draper was such a, you know, even though he was a guy, you know, who had, you know, big character arcs and affairs and, you know, hard drinking, but he was a, you know, a guy who held a lot of things in. I think people saw, you know, as great as he was, I think they thought maybe John Hamm's a little bit of a stiff. And he's not. That was the character he was playing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. A guy who was super uptight and had a lot of problems and kind of held things in. But he's you know, as you heard in that clip, this is a bigger kind of role and he can certainly handle it. So
that's
I hope
cool.
people take a chance on Beirut.
Beirut. All right. 3.5 stars.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that Rosamund Pike, I like that. Something tells me that they fall into bed together. I don't know why.
You know, you never know.
Yeah. I get it. I get
you
what
never
happens
know.
Here. Yeah.
Can't
All
say.
Right. All right. Now, the movie that everybody has been waiting for, because it takes place in Chicago.
Sort of, right?
Sort of.
Sort of Atlanta, sort of Chicago.
Sort of. It could be Paris. It could also be New York. We're not, or Toronto. We're not exactly sure because the buildings are all mushed together.
Yeah.
It's one of those movies where things get a little wacky. You got The Rock and a gigantic monkey.
Yeah, Rampage, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And, you know, they actually do. I'll say this much. You might recall last year there were a couple of weekends when streets were shut down downtown because they were filming for this movie, Rampage. But it was mostly just to get all kinds of cool aerial shots. I don't know if Dwayne The Rock Johnson was ever here. He might have been here for a couple of days. But, okay, so the setup of this movie is, I love this, Dwayne The Rock Johnson plays a guy who's a primatologist, right? So he's an expert in apes and gorillas, et cetera, like that, at the San Diego Wildlife Animal Sanctuary. But it's one of those movies where you have to have a character read the resume of our main guy. Like, so, you know, he'll look at him and say, so if it isn't Dwayne The Rock Johnson's character, I see here you're a primatologist. Oh, Special Forces. You were in Special Forces before that. How convenient that Mr. Zoo.
Good to know.
That is some cheap writing right there.
Yeah. So that'll explain when the bleep hits the fan, how he can handle this. So he's taking care of this beautiful albino gorilla, one of the few in existence, who all of a sudden experiences a very rapid and sudden growth overnight.
Last night he was 7 feet, 500 pounds. This morning he's almost 9 feet, pushing 1,000.
Are you familiar with CRISPR?
Yeah, genetic engineering.
It's more like genetic editing. I am the only one who can cure him.
George, no! George! 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 It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. Yes, I know you're scared. I'm gonna help you.
No, you're not.
Oh.
Can I say something here about the writing already?
Yeah. Oh,
the fact that you had to have that clipboard moment in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, there's an old adage, you know, in film school about writing, and you don't want the voice of the narrator is a cheap out. I think the voice of the narrator has made some of the greatest movies of all time.
Depends on the film. Yeah, absolutely.
But the what's worse is when you have writing like what we just heard right there, where you have to, it's more like editing, not engineering. I hate this movie already.
You should. It's terrible. I gave it 1 star. So the ape, there's a giant ape because of, you know, the serum made by the evil corporation that, of course, is headquartered here in Chicago. And then there's a giant crocodile and there's a giant wolf. And all three of them, here's the evil genius's plan. Malin Ackerman, who's in Billions, who's terrific. She plays the, you know, the head of the evil. It's like Enzyme. It always has a weird name with Y's and E's in it, corporation. And in the movie, their headquarters are in the Willis Tower.
Oh.
And she wants all the giant beasts to come to Chicago because she figures the government will kill them and then she'll be able to get their DNA to continue her evil experiments. Not the most well thought out plan of all time. Because
although
she puts,
the Willis Tower would like the tenant.
Yeah. Well, so that's interesting.
They got some space
so she,
there.
She has a crew install like this sonar that only the three giant creatures can hear so that they will come to her. And then I'm thinking, well, you just summoned three gigantic, crazy beasts to your headquarters, and she's still in her office. So I did like this movie when it first came out, and it was called Jurassic Park. Okay, that's what we're looking at here. And they tear up Chicago again.
That's what it's about, because it was based on a video game, right? The Rampage.
Yes,
because the
exactly.
Chicago Tribune went and interviewed the two guys, and they're from Chicago. One lives in Homewood, and they went to his basement to ask him about the original video game.
And I could see it as a video game because it's all about, you know, the crocodile can, you know, chew up up things, and you know, the streets of Chicago. There was one moment at the screening at Navy Pier IMAX that in the Chicago crowd, you know, a lot of people are just, hey, we're just going to see a Dwayne the Rock Johnson movie. Let's have fun.
Yeah, because we love him.
But there's a moment where the Willis Tower, and they never call it that, but it's clearly what it is, you know, and there's a moment where it's been hit by explosions and the monsters and stuff, and it collapses exactly how the footage we remember seeing, and of course some people, you know, saw the horrific thing in person, of the World Trade Center. It collapses just like that, in that exact same fashion, through the special effects of this movie, and it's played for almost for laughs. And I'll tell you, I've rarely heard a sneak preview audience go so quiet so quickly at the wrong time. Now, I don't know if that's going to have that same effect in other cities, but people here, you know, it just was like, what are you doing?
That's hard
here?
To see.
You know, it's one thing. It's a cartoon. We get all that. But just to show it like that and have all the characters kind of just dust themselves off, because it's one of those movies where, you know, The Rock gets shot. He gets bitten. He gets, you know, he's in a helicopter crash. He has to jump out of a plane, and he might as well be Thor, because nothing can hurt him.
Do we, since we hate the movie already, can we hate and it. Even we though it's it. Homegrown, we apologize, but maybe next time base it on something else. Are we King Kong in this monkey? All of a sudden we love him, we hate him, we love him.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's got this special bond with George, and he tries to connect with, you know, George.
And you call him George too. That's, I mean, really going to name a monkey George? Yeah. After George of the Jungle and all that, exactly. Really,
I kept thinking of that too. And I like Dwayne Johnson. He's he's got a great on screen presence, but he keeps doing the same movie over and over. And he's got another one coming out in like a month called Skyscraper. And the poster for the movie is him jumping between two buildings that appear to be 300 feet apart. if you remember, they showed the commercial in the Super Bowl. But apparently, when he does that thing where characters in the movies where they flap their arms and legs when they jump like a long jumper, might get you an extra 18 inches. If you're Bob Beeman at the Olympics, right? It's not going to get you from building to building.
But he's the Rock, so he can do it.
Right.
Yeah.
I love him, too. And it really does have, you know, the best arch eyebrow since the last guy with one. And I think he's a great personality for film. But, yeah. He's got to be in the right stuff. It's got to have heart to it.
And he's had, you know, huge, huge, huge box office. Even his bad movies, especially internationally, this will make money because, you know, you don't need to understand the language, as you heard from that clip. If somebody was watching on the plane, and you don't have the headphones on, you'd be watching the same movie.
Perfect.
All right, stay right here. We're also going to learn from Mr. Roper about Andre the Giant, the documentary about that. Literally a giant of the wrestling and then Hollywood in his career. And then we're also going to learn about Lean on Pete. We'll find out what that's all about. But first, Violetta.
Everyone catered to Andre, justifiably so. You know, a case of beer. It was always, you know, booze. It was always whatever it is Andre wanted. He enjoyed performing, but he enjoyed the party afterwards.
The stories about Andre's drinking are almost another level of mythology from the man himself. Andre was certainly, I mean, one of, if not the greatest drinker that ever lived.
I myself saw him almost every night drink 7,000 calories worth of alcohol.
I've done that. Wow. Richard Roper is here. Andre the Giant is a documentary about this giant
legendary wrestling. And the first voice you hear there is Vince McMahon, of course, the architect of pro wrestling as we know it. And I think I want to say Rick Nature Boy Flair. Was that his name? Rick Flair? Rick Flair. Three and a half stars. I want to say that right off the bat. It's a great documentary, and you can get it on HBO or call it up on your on-demand or whatever. And it's done by the same guy who did the ESPN 30 for 30 about the 85 Bears. And he did the ESPN 30 for 30 about Fab Five of Michigan. Yeah. So very talented filmmaker. And you know, Andre the Giant, of course, is long since left us. But there's amazing archival footage going all the way back to when he was growing up in France. And you know, the mark, I think, of a great documentary about somebody who was that well-known is you learn so many things about this person that you didn't know. Mm-hmm. Starting with the fact that I didn't realize he was 17 and normal-sized when he all of a sudden got hit. They call it giantitis. There's more technical terms for it. But he was a regular-sized kid all the way up until the time he was 17 years old. And then all of a sudden, this crazy growth spurt happened. So imagine that. It's not like he grew up, you know, as the biggest kid. He was, you know, a big kid, but not that big. And then all of a sudden, he went from, like, you know, 5'11 to 7'5", and as they mentioned, 500 pounds. So you get a lot of his background. and you know, his career. One of the cool things I like about this film too is they get everybody, which tells you how much people respected Andre the Giant. So Hulk Hogan, but he's not as Hulk Hogan. He's more like Terry Bollea, you know, the real guy, talking in real terms about his friend who eventually became his opponent in WrestleMania 3. Everybody who was in The Princess Bride and Rob Reiner, who directed it, sharing their memories of working with Andre. And you hear that story about the drinking. They say, you know, he would average about 6 bottles of wine and maybe 3 cases of beer per night.
Gee.
And there's a still photo of him in Canada holding a can of Molson, and it looks like one of those little Tabasco jar, you know, things you get in a restaurant, in one of our hands. So, you know, talks a lot about his wrestling career, but also about the man, because, you know, he could never not be Andre the Giant. You can't put on a disguise when you're 7'4 and 500 pounds, you know? And he was in an era where, you know, if you're Shaquille O'Neal, you can build a house and do things to accommodate your size. That really wasn't available in the 70s. So he was uncomfortable physically almost his whole life. And then people would just talk about him as if he were a freak. You know, Andre the Giant, not this nice, smart, thoughtful, conflicted man from France.
Wow. That is incredible. All right, so 3.5 stars.
Yes.
It's on the HBO. I just do that to annoy me a little. It's on HBO. It is on, I think I also, is it on some of the other, is it on Netflix too?
I don't think so. I think there's a document, another doc about him that's been out for a while.
Oh, okay.
So people know.
And people will try to confuse you with that.
But this is the one.
Get the HBO one.
Go to HBO.
Yeah, it's really a great film. Really well done.
And by the way, The Circus returns to Showtime this weekend too. We should point that out.
Yikes.
Slightly different cast.
Yes. I think it's all basically the same. Well, yeah. If I'm not mistaken. All right. So once again, we got 3.5 stars for Beirut. You got 1 star, did you say, for Rampage?
Yeah.
And Andre the Giant, 3.5 stars, a documentary, which you can watch at home right now.
Awesome.
All right.
I'm going to check it out.